Funding for The Front Row on Texas Tech Public Radio comes from the Helen Jones Foundation and from Citibank. Citibank's award-winning app delivers features that are redefining mobile banking, like the ability to turn your debit card off if it's ever lost or stolen, and the ability to raise ATM and spending limits. More information is at citibankonline.com. Citibank, member FDIC. Support also comes from Texas Tech's J.T. and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts. Art, music, theater, and dance. Dean Noel Zoller invites you to enjoy some of the 800 performances and exhibits produced each year by talented students, faculty, and visiting artists. See the stars of tomorrow on the stage today. Texas Tech's J.T. and Margaret Talkington College of Visual and Performing Arts. Explore, dream, discover. And from Lubbock's Cultural District. Always creative, never flat. More information is available at lubbockculturaldistrict.org. Today's edition of The Front Row unpacks the Texas Tech University Symphony Orchestra concert, which takes place this Sunday evening at 7:30 in Hemley Recital Hall. On today's edition of The Front Row, we're visiting with Philip Mann, who is Director of Orchestral Studies at the Texas Tech University School of Music. Dr. Mann, welcome. Thanks for being with us today.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
The Texas Tech University Orchestra is giving a concert on Sunday. Tell us about it. Unpack it for us.
It's kind of a blockbuster program. It's something that I think everyone across the School of Music has been looking forward to all year. We have combined forces of a large symphony orchestra with expanded brass and percussion section featured in Holst's The Planets. But adding to that large orchestra, we're also going to have the women's chorus under the direction of Carolyn Cruz, who will sing in Neptune. There's a women's chorus part that is one of the most ethereal, extraordinary moments in classical music, where you have this sense of distance and perspective out in the heavens as an orchestra is joined by this offstage chorus out of sight. And then we actually start this program with another work, which is one of my favorites. It's a nice gem of the classical repertoire, and that's Beethoven's Overture to Creatures of Prometheus. And it's an underplayed work, partly because it's pretty tricky, but our orchestra's handling it with aplomb right now and has a lot of the kind of joie de vivre of Haydn and that spark of Mozart. And that will be under the direction of Daliana Lazarova, one of our graduate TAs right now, who's already distinguishing herself, not just at the school, but conducting in Europe right now.
Fantastic. So this is one of a number of concerts that you give across the course of a school year, right? So it's part of a curriculum, I guess, to do concerts throughout the year?
Yeah, I think we view it just like any orchestra or opera or chorus company might look at it. And we have a season. We program years, and we program years in advance. And this is one of the larger works that we'll be performing on the year. So, you know, you might have a season opener or a season closer. You know, this is the kind of time of year where, for instance, when I'm wearing my other hat as a music director of a professional symphony orchestra, this is what we call renewal time. This is when subscriptions come in. And so often there's a tradition in February and March where you do a big blockbuster kind of program that excites audiences, that energizes people, and kind of keeps that momentum going towards the end of the year. It's also a nice time for students, because you think about it, and this is we're more than halfway through the year now. This is something that people have been working up towards. We've been building an esprit de corps in the orchestra, building a culture and an expectation, and you see this great artistic growth and trajectory that's happening. And this is a nice time to challenge people, to raise the bar once again.
Great. Well, let's talk a little bit about the actual program itself. You said it begins with the Beethoven, the Overture to the Creatures of Prometheus. That's a ballet by Beethoven.
That's right.
And that's kind of, you don't think of Beethoven as a ballet composer.
Nor do you think of him as an opera composer, but in both of those genres, his showmanship is just perfectly on display. I think when we talk about Beethoven, we all know Beethoven so well, whether we've really studied classical music or not, because we have so much experience with him. And that familiarity, that ubiquity, sometimes maybe rounds off the edges in our minds, and we forget what an absolute powerhouse of a showman he was. And the way he handles expectations, the way he sets you up for things as a listener and surprises it or subverts your expectation, it never ceases to amaze me. You know, with Beethoven, you always find something new in the score every time. That's always a mark of a great master. It's a mark of a masterpiece. And in this case, what you find often in the Creatures of Prometheus are these tips of the hat to Haydn and to Mozart. There are moments where you think, well, this could be Nozze di Figaro. This could be one of the late Haydn symphonies. This could be something from one of the Beethoven piano sonatas or a Haydn quartet. There's all kinds of little bits of material that just light up from the page, and you'd be forgiven for just smiling openly as you listen to this piece. It has an elan to it. The challenge of it is making it sound easy, because it is beastly difficult, particularly for the strings, and then it has an exposed kind of wind playing that leaves everyone just hanging right out there on their own. When it's played brilliantly, though, it's one of my favorite Beethoven overtures.
Right. Tell us about the conductor who will lead the orchestra.
Her name's Deliana Lazarova, and she's in her second semester with me as a doctoral conducting student. She comes to conducting studies from a background in violin. Lubbock audiences have seen her recently as the concertmaster of Lubbock Symphony, and she became known to me through a colleague who, a very respected conductor that I know, that was Lauren Mizell's assistant. And when I took the position here at Texas Tech, I started calling some of my colleagues and say, do you know anybody that is particularly promising, that's looking for opportunities? You know, I think we have a wonderful setting here to offer great amounts of conducting experience, you know, conducting great repertoire and conducting rehearsals frequently, which isn't necessarily always the case. And her name came to me from this other conductor. And when we reached out to each other, it turned out we had a great connection. And so she's come here, and she's appearing with the Royal Concertgebouw Orchestra in Amsterdam with the International Gatti Masterclasses. While we're doing this interview, she's actually in London at the BBC Orchestra with Manon Alsop doing a masterclass and doing some other programs that are just purely as guest conductor in Bulgaria later this semester. And so we're really bringing kind of an international level of talent to our stage here. And I'm excited about that, because for two reasons. One, I think we're doing something that very few schools, if any, are doing in the United States right now in our conducting curriculum. But two, the students at Texas Tech are benefiting not just from faculty, but this exceptional level of graduate student that are also getting a chance to work with them.
And then tell us about the second work on the program, The Planets by Gustav Holst.
I mean, this is a work that a lot of musicians would reflect on as being one of the reasons they decided to be a musician. Or perhaps a symphony goer might say, that was the one that made me fall in love with symphonic music, or I bought my first subscription after hearing a performance of that. We're even going to build on it, and we're going to add some images of NASA public domain extraordinary high-definition imagery that we're going to project up in the organ loft for people to see as we play the music. Indeed, we have a new professor of astronomy, Dr. Robert Moorhead, who's a specialist in exoplanetary formations. And he's going to do a pre-concert talk. And I think this is very interesting, because he's going to talk not only about his own research, but he's going to talk about the juxtaposition and the differences of Holst's approach to these planetary objects versus sciences, because in Holst's The Planets, it's very much astrology. So we have Mercury, the winged messenger, and Venus, all of these characters, Mars, the bringer of war, that starts it off. And in fact, you know, an astronomer would say, well, why didn't we start near the sun and move outward, or maybe start at Neptune and move inward? Pluto hadn't been discovered yet, and then hadn't lost its planetary status yet. But conspicuously, if you really think about the solar system, the sun is missing. So, okay, fine. He wants to make it about the planets, but there's another planet that's missing from this suite, Earth.
Right.
But each of these movements, moving first from Mars inwards toward the sun and then from Jupiter outwards to Neptune, brings a different character, a different narrative, and a different kind of collection of influences. So in Mars, we'll have these military, martial, smoldering, hot, red kind of sounds in the orchestra that are evocative of perhaps some of the great battle scenes of Mahler, this kind of sound, or maybe, you know, going into the 19th century, something like the big sword fights of Tchaikovsky, this kind of thing. But then we'll have some exquisite technicolor, incredible orchestration on display of things like Saturn, the bringer of old age, or Venus, where we have these textures that kind of morph slowly in a different temporal reality, where you have a sense that perhaps we're spinning at a different pace, and time means something different for a few minutes. It really is an evocative journey where we meet all of these different characters. And as a conductor, I find it always challenging but very rewarding, because it's almost like doing lots of different pieces. So we have to explore all these different possibilities of color and texture, and that the palette is just extraordinary.
That's one of the things I've always marveled about The Planets, is that there's such a contrast in the compositional techniques between all of the pieces. They are very much individual ideas about what the planets are.
That's a really astute comment. In the way it feels in the hands as a conductor or for the musicians, it almost feels like sometimes you're interacting with different composers entirely. I think Holst didn't just wear multiple hats. I mean, it's almost like multiple personalities. He wrote this over time as well, so there's some space and some time for him to edit. And you get a sense that you're almost doing just different pieces. The things that you work on in one planet don't apply to the other
right.
one. And in fact, they
right.
may be in contrast, like very strict contrast. So it's a very good teaching piece for a university setting, because it really expands the musicianship expectations of a young artist, where you're asking them to listen with much broader and bigger ears than perhaps they normally might be asked to.
Right. And as you mentioned, Pluto doesn't exist, or at least Holst. There are other people who have gone and added, but Holst didn't provide music for Pluto. So we end with Neptune. And tell us exactly how you're going to use this women's chorus, because I think this is one of the unique things in all of music, is the method by which he incorporates this wordless women's chorus into the music.
You know, I hear it now, and it almost sounds like it was written yesterday. I mean, it sounds like something that is new and fresh and a brilliant idea that could be on the stage in Berlin of a new music ensemble concert, or it could be a film soundtrack of somebody who's very innovative right now. And by the way, there are also some pieces written for like the asteroid belt. So people are finding all kinds of reasons to do this kind of thing right now. But this effect, it's so special for a couple reasons. The first is it provides you with a sense of space and time that takes you out of the normal concert hall mode of thinking. In some ways, it reminds me of how Mahler incorporated bandas and different offstage trumpets to signal maybe it's battle, maybe it's fate, maybe, you know, different big cosmic ideas. But Holst seems to take this same kind of notion of expanding the concert space outside the walls of what you can visibly see. And he puts it in, as you mentioned, a wordless texture that doesn't have a great deal of pulse to it. There isn't a great deal of sense of rhythmic clarity or direction. And it gives you a sense of almost floating. There is a sense that you are out there amongst these celestial bodies without a whole lot to hold on to. And at the very end, as it fades away, what we've done is we've staged it in such a way where Carolyn Cruz, and very aptly and deftly, is positioning herself where just out of the corner of her eye, she can see me conducting. And then we kind of have this dance as two conductors. I fit the orchestra with what she does with the chorus off stage. And as the orchestra eventually fades away to nothing, the chorus continues, but off stage, facing away, and then further away. And then they actually start to, as we would say in the business, schlep. They start to physically walk away from the stage out into a corridor. And the sense is that you never hear the end of the sound. It's just a fading away of these women's voices. And it's an ethereal, astonishing moment. It's one of these moments in classical music where audiences often find themselves afraid to clap at the
right.
end.
So that's wonderful. Big orchestra.
Huge
orchestra.
Yeah.
Yeah. Where do you find all the players?
That's one of the great things of being in a university, where if you need a fantastic tenor tuba or euphonium soloist, you have people all over that do this. Now, in a professional orchestra, you have to, where do you find that, right? Well, we've got 10 people for every spot in the orchestra at the university. So one, we have exceptional artistic talent that's on display. But two, we have these resources. You know, we have a percussion section with every possible iteration of instrument available. We've got brass faculty that are sitting in with their students in rehearsal, which I find inspiring. And we have an expanded string section. So it's always a joy as a conductor to look out and know that you have 18-second violins. I mean, that composers often envisage this scale, the scope of orchestra, but in practicality, often resources prevent us from being able to mount those. But at a university like Texas Tech, we do that all the time. So it's a pleasure.
That's good. Will you use the organ?
We will, yes.
Great.
Dr. Peter Martins will be sitting up there for his moment in Mars, and then a few other pedal tones later in the piece.
That's great. Well, and we're fortunate where we actually have an instrument. Not every concert hall has one. And so it's a chance to use all of these things. Well, congratulations.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I'm looking forward to it.
Great. Tell us again, times, dates, places.
So the concert is at 7:30, Sunday evening, February 11th. Encourage people to come early, at least by 6:45. Dr. Robert Moorhead, professor of astronomy, is going to give a fantastically interesting talk about the planets, about exoplanets in our solar system, and he's going to tie those things together with the images that people will be able to see as we perform it. You'll get a chance to see Dr. Carolyn Cruz and her women's chorus as well, and a fantastic symphony orchestra. Come check us out.
Great. Philip Mann, thank you very much for being on the front row today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's a pleasure.
Today's edition of our program will be up on our website, kttz.org, later today. Rachel Boyd produces The Front Row. I'm Clint Barrick. Thanks for listening.